Welcome. Today is the 2nd of September, 2008. And there's a new monthly planner there for those of you who like to use the monthly planner. And we were discussing a few moments ago that there aren't as many gold and silver days as there have been in other months. The reason being that, if a gold day would be when the moon would be in conjunction with Jupiter or in conjunction with Venus. Those are really, really powerful days. And gold days means favorable, auspicious. And when you do things on days like that, the chance of their being successful increases, so many times, just multiple times. Those are the best days to begin things, to do very important things, to buy things. I don't mean groceries. I mean, cars, houses, things that are important and they need to succeed. It's necessary that they succeed. So gold days and silver days are really, really powerful. Bronze days are your average day. Not bad. Not great. Okay. But you don't have to feel badly about doing things on bronze days. But the gold and the silver are reduced because once you have a malefic or malevolent or negative planet also present in that same sign, that wipes out the good effect of another planet automatically. Because it's like if you have milk and we put a drop of poison in the milk, you can't just drink the part that doesn't have the poison in it. So it's like this. It spreads and everything becomes tainted by the influence of the negative planet, or at least potentially so. Also, it does not mean, for example, that if you do things on a gray day, because you must do things on a gray day and you have no choice, because sometimes that is the case, that automatically it's going to fail. It does not mean that. Because things can go very well on gray days. Things can succeed on gray days. But the potential of success is greatly reduced. That's, you're rolling the dice. You're taking a greater chance to start things on a gray day. So, Josh and Athena are continuing their European tour. They were going to leave today or tomorrow for Amsterdam, and I said, better tomorrow. Today is a gray day. And, starting off the next leg of their journey, it's better that it would be a bronze day, and that will remove some of the potential problem that might have been there. Okay, so September.
So would Chan say that you have to do something on a gray day?
Yes.
Chanting before taking the action.
Exactly, Colette. Chanting is always beneficial. Chanting, like praying, chanting is praying. Repeating mantras are specific prayers with a particular sound vibration. Mantras are prayers with a very, very high sound vibration or vibration, period. And that will do a lot to counteract potential negative effects. So, absolutely. That's what you do if you have to do things. Even if you're doing them on good days, you still do the mantras. And if you have to do the things on the gray days, then for sure you should do the mantras, prayers, meditation. You can also envision in your meditation that whatever it is you're doing, it succeeds. see it happening the way you want it. Speaking of gray days, we went away to Galway and Connemara for a couple days last week. And when we left, the internet here was working fine. When we got back, the internet was not working. And then I had to do my radio show Sunday morning at 4 a.m. like you do every Sunday to Hawaii. And I had no internet there. Therefore, I could not communicate with the producer during the show, which was a bit of a challenge. So 3 days, the internet's been down. Clindy had a flash that, gee, why don't I go examine the cable there? You see it out the window. And the hare, or whom somebody, once some animal, decided to have dinner on her internet cable and bit through. And so the day of the radio show was a great day. And needless to say, we had no internet connection. All right. Tomorrow we are celebrating or honoring Sri Ganesh. How are you, Sheila? It's Ganesh's birthday or appearance day, the day he's honored tomorrow. That's Ganesh there up on the altar. The little guy in the middle. You can almost see him. But this is also him here. This is painted. You can see it's painted on a wall in India. This photograph is taken. As you can see, the paint peeled off there right around his feet. But I really thought that was a neat little painting. Yeah. So, we're going to talk a little bit about Ganesh today. Ganesh is the elephant-headed god. When we say god in this sense, we're talking about demigods. In the Christian understanding, we would call them angels or archangels. They wouldn't be God himself, but they would be beyond humans. They wouldn't have the limitations that we would have. They could come and go through different dimensions to the heavenly planets above where they reside, to the middle planets, the middle worlds, earthly planets where we reside, down to the hellish worlds or darker worlds where the demons and the miscreants reside. Could we reside down there? Oh, sure. Depends how you conduct yourself. You could also be residing. So the souls are understood to be traveling among these three worlds over a period of thousands of lifetimes. Not hundreds. Thousands. You do good works, you go up to the heavenly planets. Heavenly planets is not the spiritual world, as we've said many times. The heavenly realms or celestial realms are the place where the gods reside or the angels reside. And it is the place where souls go to reap the benefits of good acts performed. But it is part of the material creation. It is not the spiritual world. So, higher planets, middle planets, lower planets, all the material world. If you do negative things, hurtful, destructive things, then you could be sent down to the hellish worlds and, reap the benefits of that. Well, they're not benefits. Suffer accordingly. You could also, instead of going down to hellish worlds, you could be placed in a lower life form, like a dog, like a donkey, like an insect, any species, tree. So anything's possible according to Vedic understanding. So Ganesh is well loved and well appreciated, not only in India, where he comes from, or where the tradition comes from, but throughout the world. Almost everybody knows about Ganesh. I'm sort of surprised when I meet somebody who's never heard of him. No offense, but almost everybody's heard of Ganesh. We have a nice statue of Ganesh right inside the door there, dancing Ganesh.
So what's the spiritual world then?
Hmm? The spiritual world is beyond the heavenly planets, middle planets, and lower planets. The spiritual world is where God lives. And this is where we go when we learn all the lessons. When the soul does not need to take another birth here in the material world, one goes to the spiritual world. There's Ganesh. He's come down.
He's heavy.
At the point of death, if you have any material desires related to the body, to matter, then you will be given an opportunity to fulfill those desires by being given another body. Very simple. If you are attached to any material person, place, or circumstance, you will definitely come back into another body, because your attachment makes it so. Where here on this plane, we must learn to let go of attachment and aversion. We have positive attachment or attraction, where you're drawn to something in a positive way. Aversion is what? Negative attachment. Oh, I just hate that. That's an attachment. Oh, I just love that. That's an attachment. What does that mean? You can't love? You can love. You should love. You should love everybody, if possible. But you can't be attached. You have to be willing to let go when the time comes. Guess when that time is? Now? Sure, of course. But at death. That is for sure the time. So, whatever you're attached to, that will bring you back to that circumstance. That will guarantee you another body if you're attached to anything connected to the body. Bodily attachment. So, that could mean a loved one. That could mean a place. There's a lot of nationality worship and race worship. There's a lot of that in this country. Very strong here. There's a lot of that in America. Very strong there. I was born and raised in Canada. Not so much there. People aren't all beside themselves about being Canadian. It's not so much a big deal there. But when you're really attached to being Irish or being American, or whatever you are, Jewish, people are really attached to being Jewish. Unbelievably so. Or Palestinian or whatever. This is not a plus. It's not a plus. It's connected to the body. It's a bodily concept. It's a bodily identification. Just because you're Irish this lifetime does not mean you'll be Irish next lifetime. Just because you're in a woman's body now does not mean you'll be in a woman's body in the next lifetime. These are the living being. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells Arjuna that the living being carries different conceptions of life, as the air carries different aromas. So right now, I'm smelling Irish. I'm feeling Irish. I'm born in Ireland, not me, but, you know. So that's a concept. It's an idea. It's a conception. It's true, but it's only true now. And so it's important not to get all wrapped up in that stuff. You can be respectful and honor these things in the proper way. You can sing your national anthem. All of that's fine. We need to be grateful for the things that we receive, but not attached. So whatever we're attached to, there we will go. That we'll get. That is the destination we will arrive at. So, in the spiritual world, to get to the spiritual world, we must have exhausted all of our karma, positive karma, negative karma. There's no more that you have to go, come back here and enjoy, and there's nothing more you have to come back here to suffer. All of that's been neutralized. And that will free the soul from samsara. Samsara means?
Birth and death.
Repeated birth and death. Transmigration of the soul. So, the spiritual world is where God is. Some people like to look at God as an energy. Some people like to see God in all the various forms of beings. And some people like to meet God face to face. All three levels of God realization that I've just mentioned are legitimate. They're legitimate. They exist. So whichever one you like, that's the one you get. Whichever one you focus on.
I have a question. So what if like you're attached to, like you're saying, a place like Ireland, or for instance someone wants to become famous and they're attached to that, so when they come back, can they not stop coming back until they get that sort of thing that they want?
Correct.
Or
when people, well, fame is a good example. Sometimes you'll see somebody who's a very famous singer or pop star or rock star or musician or whatever, actor. It doesn't mean that in one lifetime this soul has achieved this position. It is not likely. It generally means that this soul at some point in time had the genesis of this desire. I want to become a famous singer. Okay. Now we begin. So we start with the singing lessons, or we just start singing. Maybe we were in a group, a musical group. Maybe we're in a choir. Who knows? Maybe we are music majors in university. And so we go. Now that may take several lifetimes. And it builds and builds and builds and builds until it culminates. What does culminate mean? Until you're satisfied that you did it and you had enough. That's what culminate means. Does that mean that everybody becomes a pop star? No. It means different things to different people. How come it is that we know wonderfully talented people, artistic or creative or musical people, no one will ever hear them? You've heard these people. Yet then we hear some other people who can barely play a guitar and they got a number one record. right? Because that person who's got the number one record, who hasn't played much in this lifetime, and he's 21 years old now, has already put in the work in other lifetimes, and the karma has fructified. And there he goes. So, once you're satisfied that that's enough, and you don't need that anymore, been there, done that. You can name right now, if I ask you to name 6 things in this lifetime, 6 different things that you've done in this lifetime where you said, okay, I see what that's like, I had enough, and you moved on to something else. Easily you could think of 6 things. And if I said, do you want to do that thing again? You said, nah, I don't think so. Or you might say, oh, I'd love to do that again. If I had the chance, or if my body was still able for it, I'd love to do it. You know. So there's many things you just go, oh, yeah, I tried it. You know, when you have a young child, like our friend Alex here, and you give them opportunities. They try this, they have this lesson, these lessons, they learn this, they learn that. And hopefully they find something that they like and stick to. You know, sometimes that happens. Sometimes it doesn't. And depends on your desire. And that desire is usually, you can trace it back through previous lifetimes.
Do you agree that the old desires and the mind, the heart, were already there? We're already exactly at the beginning of the land is already now. So it's all from the mind.
Desire is exactly equivalent to planting a seed in the earth. Karma is exactly equivalent to planting a seed in the earth. So you plant a seed, now within the earth it germinates. You yourself, this might be in the very, very unconscious stage before it even comes up into your consciousness, before you go, I think I'd like to become famous at, you know, whatever. Or, pardon me, learn something. And then it sprouts, comes up above the earth, grows a little stalk, gets big enough over time. Flowers start to come, or the buds, the flowers, and bears fruit. Like maybe, like say for example, an apple tree. To do apple trees, they don't bear fruit the first year. How many years does it take before they'll bear fruit?
3 years.
Yeah. So it takes time before it bears fruit. So same thing too with karma. You do things and then there's a result. You know, there's karma, and the karma will come sooner or later. You get the fruits of your actions. That's what we mean by karma. For every action there is a reaction. What goes around comes around. Anybody who does not believe in karma, cannot grasp the concept of karma, cannot be living in this world. The only problem with karma is that people think it has, you know, one life. We have one life, that's it. Better make the best of it. If they could appreciate the fact that we have numerous lifetimes and the karma is carried over, we would have much more peace of mind knowing that. And it's all in how you look at it. I was sitting once in Nepal on top of this hill, and I was meditating, and I was looking around, and in the distance was the Himalayas, the high Himalayas, snow covered. It's crystal blue sky, clear day. And I was sitting there and I was thinking, wow, look where I am. And then this group of children came up real loud and laughing, and you know, and I was a foreigner, and they were real sweet kids, Nepali kids. And they asked me, "Where are you from?" And I said, "America." And they said, "America." How did they say it? "America, good country." I said, "Really?" And a few of them said it. "America, very good country." I said, "Really? Why?" "Good country." I said, "Have you been there?" "No." I said, "Yeah, maybe." I said, "Nepal, very good country." They're looking at me like this. I said, "Look how beautiful it is here. Nepal, very beautiful country." They're looking around. Because they never thought of it. You know, yeah, granted, you know, they don't have as many opportunities. They're all happy. They're all having fun. Then they decided they'd all take a notebook that I had and start drawing pictures of me in the notebook. Which they did. And one of them was especially talented, you know. They were signing their names. And so, depends how you look at it. Alright, did that answer the question? Alright, so let's go back to our friend Ganesh. Each of the Puranas, which are histories, ancient histories, written in Sanskrit, has a different story regarding the birth of Ganesh. Now, why do we find different stories about different personalities in the Vedas, in the Puranas? Does anybody know the answer to that question? Because we've talked about time and the cycle of time from the Vedic concept, and it is mind-blowing. Because we're talking about cycles that go across millions of years. Millions. So, we have a golden age, silver age, bronze age, and iron age. The iron age that we're currently in, called Kali Yuga, lasts for 432,000 years. Iron age is the age of quarrel, hypocrisy, ignorance, destruction, corruption, cheating, greed, domination. Seen any of that recently? On the front page of the newspaper. So, there are different eras or epochs, and at different times, these same divine beings appear. So they would have a different origin in a different age. You follow me? Did I make it clear? So that's why the stories are different. That what they neglect to tell you, if they would said, in the Vaivasvata Manu era of the 14th day of Brahma, in the 153rd creation, then he appeared, and he appeared in this way. That's how it would have to be said, which is mind-blowing when you start thinking about it. We know that the creator Brahma has a life of how many? 100 years? And Vishnu, who's God, breathed the creation out, one breath. Here's the creation. Day of Brahma. One day of the creator Brahma. Then Vishnu, God, breathes in. And the creation disappears. Goes into a state of dormancy. Suspended animation. That's the nighttime of Brahma. That was one day, one night. He's got 100 years of his life. Okay? That's how it works. It appears. It's manifest. It's unmanifest. It's manifest. It's unmanifest. That's how it works. So, okay. Birth of Ganesh. Each of the Puranas has a different story regarding the birth of Ganesh. In some, he is the Manasik Putra, or mind-born son of Shiva. In others, he is the creation of Parvati, Shiva's wife. In still others, he's the son of Shiva and Parvati. So we know one thing, he's connected to Shiva and Parvati. Shiva is also a very high form of Vishnu energy, not quite Vishnu, not quite God, but he's described in other places. If God is milk, if Vishnu is milk, then God is, Shiva, pardon me, is yogurt. It's like milk and yogurt. From milk, you produce yogurt. From Vishnu, you produce Shiva. Okay, so we've talked about Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva how many times? Countless times. Those are the three manifestations of the Godhead in the material world. Brahma creates. Vishnu himself, God himself, maintains. And Shiva destroys, wraps it all up. Autumn is coming. Guess who's in charge of autumn? Shiva. All right. According to one Puranic story or historic story, the Devas or the gods, the minor gods or celestial beings, approached the Almighty Shiva and asked for help as they were being harassed by the demons. Shiva consented to help them, and out of his mind appeared a glorious glowing figure of a child with the head of a powerful elephant and a trident in one hand. The gods were overjoyed to see the mind-born son of Shiva, who would henceforth protect them. There he is there. Human body, human type body, elephant head. Mind-born. Interesting concept, huh? Not womb born, mind born. Certain sages, celestial sages, there's actually seven major sages, they're called the seven sages, and their stars are the Great Big Dipper. There's seven stars on the Big Dipper. That's them. Meaning what? Them. It's explained in the Vedas that these stars that you see are locations that are self-luminous. And that because of the being who presides over that place, they are their own source of light. Right? When you see paintings of Jesus Christ, what do you see painted around his head? A halo. What they do in the paintings is they paint it around his head. Is it present around the head? Yes. Only the head? No. The entire body. So one becomes self-luminous. There's no need for a sun on those planets, because those beings are vibrating at such a level, they become self-luminous. So that's what the seven sages are the Big Dipper. For example, they are all mind-born.
What are their names?
Sons of Brahma. Oh, you would have to ask me, wouldn't you? Atri, Agastya, Gautama, Vasishta, Vishvamitra, Durvasa. No. No, he's separate. I probably got some of those wrong.
Where does Ganesh come in then if he is mind-born?
Well, he's not one of the sages. I'm just using them as an example. He is mind-born, so that means a very high being. Now, what would that be like? What do you want when you have a child? You have this idea, well, I want my child to be like this and this and this and this. And of course, my child, here she is. I've done very, very well here, I must say, myself. And I must give full credit to her mother, who has done very, very well here. She's a wonderful soul. So you have an idea, but if you could encapsulate that idea of what you want this person to be like, and then out they come from your mind, all set and ready to go, you know. Wouldn't that be great? What are we talking about? 36, our friend here just went 36 hours of labor Neve had for the child she had yesterday. You could do without the 36 hours of labor, you know. Different Neve than the one you know. A lot of Neves here in Ireland. Okay, so... he appeared, Ganesh appeared, to help protect the cause. Seeing this beautiful child, Parvati, his mother, placed him on her lap and vowed that no endeavor, human or divine, would be successful without a prayer to this young one. Shiva then made him the leader of the Gunas, or celestial hordes, calling him Ganapati. That's another name for him. Pati means lord or leader. Pati also means husband. Pati is husband and Patni is wife. Pati and Patni. In another Purana, the same story is modified slightly. According to this story, Shiva's Manasik Putra, or mind-born son, was a dazzling human boy. He appeared as a human boy. Parvati, annoyed that the child was born without her intervention, willed that the head should be turned to that of an elephant. So there's a different version. However, when she saw the elephant-headed child, she felt great love for him and stated that no endeavor, human or divine, would succeed without a prayer to Ganapati, whom Shiva had made the head and the chief of the Ganas. A more popular legend deals with the birth of Ganesh to Parvati. Once, and this is the one that is, as he says, more popular. Once, while Parvati was going for her bath, she rubbed off the dust and oil from her body, and out of it created the figure of a young boy. That's like they do with the turmeric before the yagyas. It's like dust and oil, you know, dirt and oil. Almost. She infused life into the figure and told him he was her son and should guard the entrance when she went down to bathe. Now, that went down to bathe would be like in a pond or like a little lake or a stream. So, you know, because she would be naked and she wouldn't want anybody to come. Soon after, Shiva came to see Parvati, but the young boy blocked his way and would not let him in. Shiva, unaware that this lad was his son, became furious and in great anger fought the boy, whose head got severed from his body in the ensuing battle. Parvati, returning from her bath, saw her headless son and threatened as Shakti, because she is the energy of Shiva, to destroy the heavens and the earth. So great was her sorrow. The gods and Shiva had to pacify her, and Shiva sent out the Gunas, or the hordes, to bring the head. What had happened? One story goes that one of these hobgoblins consumed the head of the child. So he said, go find the head and we'll put it back on. And we can't find it. Somebody ate it. And so he said, well, then go find me a head someplace and bring it back so I can put the head back on the body of this child before my wife destroys heaven and earth. So he said, go bring me the head of the first living being. With his head pointed toward the north, the auspicious direction associated with wisdom. So, north direction. So they did so, and the first living creature they found sleeping with his head to the north was an elephant. They brought the head of this animal, and Shiva placed it on the trunk of Parvati's son and breathed life into him. Parvati was overjoyed and embraced her son, the elephant-headed boy, whom Shiva named Ganesh, the lord of his gunas. Another Puranic legend has it that Parvati longed for a child and conveyed her desire to Shiva. He asked her to undertake the Punyaka penance for 1 year, which she did. The sage Sanat Kumara presided over the austerities and made Parvati undergo several trials and tribulations to test the strength of her vow. Finally, after she had passed all the tests and completed the vow undertaken by her, she heard a voice from the heavens telling her to look for her newborn son in her chamber. When she ran in and saw the beautiful child, she could not believe her eyes. He was more beautiful than all the gods put together, and his face shone like the morning sun. Her joy knew no bounds. All the gods and goddesses rushed to Mount Kailas, the abode of Shiva, or of his divine parents, to see this child of glory. That they paid their respects and marveled at the beauty of the child. The nine planets, or grahas, also came to greet the divine couple and their beloved son. One of them, Shani, or Saturn, would not, however, look up at the child and had his head bent. When Parvati asked him why he was reluctant to look at her son, he told her that there was a curse laid on him by his jealous wife, by which anyone he looked at with admiration would be destroyed. Parvati, anxious like a fond mother for her son to be admired, insisted that he look at her son. Well, sorry, his new baby. Do you want to see the baby? Come on, I'll show you the baby. Everybody does that naturally. Saturn then looked up at the child, whose head immediately got separated from the body and flew off into space. Parvati wailed and lamented so loudly and created such commotion that the gods rushed to Kailas. Vishnu, God himself, seeing what had happened to create such grief in Parvati, got onto his vehicle, Garuda, and flew in search of a head to replace the lost one. On the banks of the river Pushpabhadra, he found the head of a herd of elephants sleeping. Choosing an animal lying with its head to the north, he brought the head of that elephant, who was actually a Gandharva, a celestial being. Gandharvas are the ones who sing and dance and play, musicians, waiting to be released from earthly life, and placed it on the headless child's neck. Breathing life into the child, he presented it to Parvati, who was overjoyed at having a son with the wisdom and power of an elephant. Vishnu adorned the child with exquisite ornaments to match his beauty, as did Himavan, the father of Parvati. Parvati's father was Himavan, the god of the Himalayas. And her name, Parvat. Parvat means mountain. Parvati is one who was born on a mountain. So... Vishnu collected all the heavenly beings together and led the worship of the child, giving him the eight names by which he came to be commonly known. Vigneshwara, which means the Lord of Obstacles, Ganesha, Heramba, Gajanana, Elephant Face, Lambodara, Big Belly, Ekadanta, One Tusk, Shurpakarna, big ears, and Vinayaka. Not so long ago, about, I don't know how many years, I'll tell you, about 6 years ago, Ganesh is worshipped everywhere. At any shop you go to in India, not only India, many other countries that would have any appreciation for the Vedic system, yoga system, every shop will have a shrine with Ganesh and Lakshmi on it. And this is a yantra, what's it called? Vyapara Vriddhi Yantra. And this is to increase business success. So Lakshmi is the goddess of fortune. That's Lakshmi there in the middle, a large one. That is also Lakshmi at the far end. She's the goddess of fortune. She's also called Shri. And also you will find Ganesh to remove obstacles. That's his job. He's meant to be placed at your door, entryway, to neutralize any negative effect that may come in through the door. He's the bouncer. So, in India, about 6 years ago, you know, people every day make an offering, like we've made an offering here of candles and incense. Many of you have brought flowers, like you always do, and we're very grateful. And we offer those to the gods. Whatever you bring, we offer to them. That's your offering. We just do it on your behalf. You should offer everything to God. Everything. All your acts, your words, your deeds. That's why we say that mantra in the beginning. Everything is to be done for the pleasure, satisfaction of God. Why? Because then, what happens to the karma? It's neutralized. There is no karma. Whatever is offered to God becomes karma-free. You can only do things out of two reasons, for the satisfaction of God or the satisfaction of self, ego. Whatever you do out of ego for satisfaction of the self generates a reaction, generates karma. If it's a good action, it generates good karma. If it's a bad action, it generates negative karma. You may argue, well, wait a second, of course I want to generate good karma. Why? Then you have to come back and enjoy it again and again and again. You must keep coming back. You'll never get off the wheel of repeated birth and death. So the more conscious you become, the more you realize that everything should be done for the satisfaction of God and offered to God. Then there's no karma. Can you not enjoy it? Well, what do you mean? I shouldn't have any enjoyment in my life? You offer it first to God, then you enjoy it. Now you're taking the remnants of the offering. And there is no karma. So you're removing the ego factor. That's how it works. So anyway, this guy in India took a little bit of milk in a cup. And he placed it in front of a statue of Ganesh, like this, I don't know. And Ganesh drank the milk. The milk disappeared. Normally when you offer food to the gods, whatever's on the plate is still on the plate later on, right? It doesn't disappear. And it's theoretically been offered and it's been eaten by God, and now everything becomes the remnants off the plate. And it purifies you when you eat it and removes your negative karma. Anyway, in this instance, the milk got drunk. And, of course, this story went out in the newspapers, and the airwaves, Ganesh drinks milk.
Yeah, you can check the Indian.
We actually have the clippings. We have the clippings. So what happened is then everybody with the picture or statue of Ganesh, which in India would number in the millions, went ahead and offered milk to Ganesh, and he drank it everywhere from everybody. All the milk got drunk. In other words, there it was, and then it disappeared. So this went on for, I don't know, can't remember how long. A few weeks. Not just in India. Wherever anybody in the world was offering to Ganesh, all the milk, and was milk, only milk. It all got drunk. It all got accepted. It was very thirsty. He has a big belly. Lakshmi.
Is a lot of people in India wealthy then because of that?
In what?
Wealthy, like abundant. Are you talking about money? Are you talking about wealth?
Yeah, well, Lakshmi is the wife of Vishnu, wife of God.
Yeah. But if you have, if your heart is closed and you're not open, you have that. It's got to be you, though, isn't it? Or will she help? Do you understand what I'm saying?
No, you haven't asked the question yet.
Okay, if you're living in lack and you're not open and receive.
Right, correct. So you're asking her to intervene on your behalf.
Yeah.
And obviously part of that would be to open your heart and allow you to receive. A lot of times people, they don't realize they have a worthiness issue. I know many, many clients who are extremely wealthy, born wealthy, born in fabulously wealthy families. And a lot of times they're so guilty. They feel just overwhelmed with guilt because they got all this money and they don't feel they deserve it. And they look around and they see friends and other people they know or other people who they think are such wonderful people, so much more worthy, and they're struggling, these people. You know, why don't they have this money? Why do I have it? Have a hard time with it.
No one then. Ganesh
drank the milk and all that.
Was there any specific thing happening at the time, or just something
that
we were aware of?
When was this time?
2002. I can show you the clipping. 2002. Right around that time.
Did you not hear about in time to put milk out?
Who, me? I don't remember whether I did it or not. I don't recall doing it, though. No, I think it had come and gone. You see, it came and then he did it for like 3 weeks or something like that. I don't remember. I can look it up. I should have looked it up before bringing it up, I suppose. And then it stopped. It just stopped one day. And I read about it after it was all said and done. But I would have tried it, definitely. So, anyway, that was a interesting story about Ganesh. And then there's the story of the one tusk. You see, Ganesh has a broken tusk. So whenever you see Ganesh, if they paint him with two nice tusks, they got him wrong. His one is broken. Now, one of the stories on that is Vyas, who is an incarnation of Vishnu, was about to write the Mahabharata. The Mahabharata is like the greater history of India. Within the Mahabharata is the Bhagavad Gita. And Mahabharata is 100,000 verses. 100,000 Sanskrit verses. They don't rhyme, but they have meter. Right? And Vyas said, I need a scribe. I'm going to compose this poem. I need somebody to write it down while I'm composing. So he approached Ganesh Would you be my scribe? Will you write down the verses? And Ganesh said, that's going to take some doing. It's going to take a little time, you know. He said, I'll do it on one condition. That as long as I'm writing, you have to keep composing. If I have to lift the pen up off the page and you make me wait and I have to wait for you to compose the next stanza, I'm out of here. I won't do it. But as long as I can write continuously without lifting my pen off the page and wait, I'll agree to it. And Vyasa said, done. It's a deal. So Ganesh looked around, couldn't find anything to write with, so he broke off one of the tusks, cut himself an ink pot, and off they went. Vyasa started composing the verses, and Ganesh wrote. Many of the verses are, relative to Sanskrit, simple, not complex. But then he would come up with some very longer, more complicated verses that expressed difficult philosophical points. And for Vyasa, he had to really think about these verses before he could speak them. He had to get them all correct and make sure that they explained the point clearly. So what he'd have to do was, he'd have to do a whole bunch of the simple verses and rattle them off very quickly. So while Ganesh was still writing, he could take a break and think of the more complex philosophical verse and how he would structure that. And then just as Ganesh was ready to finish the last word, out he would come with the next more complicated verses. And that's the way they went. And 100,000 verses later, the Mahabharata was finished. Kalindi and I went to Badrinath, way up in the Himalayas, about 12,000 feet up. And we were up there for a few days. And it's 1 mile from the Tibetan border. They have a sign up at a little stand, a little food stand, which I thought was so funny, and it said Hard Rock Cafe. This is the original Hard Rock Cafe. So, you know, you think of the Hard Rock Cafe that they have here and there. And we were there about a mile from the Tibetan border, and this was the place where Vyasa and Ganesh sat together, and Vyasa composed the Mahabharata, or so the legend goes. And we went into the cave, which was Vyasa's cave.
A huge big valley with monstrous mountains, and then all of a sudden, plunk in the middle of the valley is this hugeongous rock, and it's just like sheets of paper all stacked on top of one another. The most bizarre thing. Literally looks like a big manuscript, only huge.
It looks like pages stacked on top of each other. Like of layers of rock.
And it's not like anything else that's around it. It's just plopped in there.
Yeah, it doesn't match anything around it. So we went in there and sat there and meditated for a while and exchanged Sanskrit verses with the pundit that was inside. And Kalindi had a spiritual experience in that place. So anyway, that's another story about Ganesh and his one tusk. So we could go on, but we'll leave it there. Tomorrow is Ganesh's appearance day. It's called Ganesh Chaturthi. Now remember last week we talked about Krishna Janmashtami, Ashtami being the eighth day of the. Chaturthi means fourth. Fourth day. So this is also the time when the sun is in the sign of Leo. And that's when kings and queens are born. Sun in Leo, very powerful people, like our friend Josh. And Eve's daughter. And Krishna was born, sun in Leo. Ganesh is born, sun in Leo. And that's on the fourth day of the, because it'll be the waxing moon. Waxing moon. Because we just had the new moon a few days ago. Okay, so tomorrow would be a good time to meditate on Ganesh. If you're going to begin something that's important, you could offer a prayer to Ganesh, or you could use this mantra. So let us look at the mantra that we printed out for you with this lovely picture of Ganesh. And the mouse is his vehicle. He rides the mouse. So wrap your mind around that one. And the mouse is sometimes compared to little problems and nuisances and little obstacles and Ganesh's ability to override them.
Keep it under control.
Because in this grand scheme of things, all of your problems, my friends, are very small. Even though sometimes they feel very big, they're actually pretty small. So when you see this guy with an elephant head and big body, big belly, riding on a little mouse, it gives you a fresh perspective in overcoming your problems. So the mantra is Om Shri Ganeshaya Namaha. 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 Now if you chant this on your mala, your chanting beads, it's Kalindi's beads. So on your beads, if you chant like this, you always hold them with the thumb and the middle finger. Om Shri Ganeshaya Namah. 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 And if you do a vow or a vrata, then you would do maybe one round a day or two rounds or five rounds, something like this, for whatever.
How many rounds? Maybe
108. So you do maybe a month. Every day. One round, two rounds. Whatever you say you're going to do, that's what you do. That's your vow. And watch what happens when you do that. Because very interesting things will happen. you'll see the effects. So now, Kalini wants to tell you about this story.
I've all heard it before.
Well, not all have heard it. Not all have heard it. I said to her, get your passport renewed. Get your passport. No, get your visa. That was it. She had this renewed passport. I said, get your visa. We're going to India. Get your visa. Put it off. Put it off. Put it off. Then our three friends arrived from Los Angeles here in Ireland, and five of us are going to India tomorrow.
The Nepalese embassy lost it in London.
The Nepalese, yeah. Well, that's true. So she had taken her passport into the Indian consulate in the city center, and they said, come tomorrow, and your visa for India will be in your passport. She said, but I'm leaving tomorrow on the airplane. They said, it's no problem. You come in the morning, it will be here. And the flight was about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So here's, we're all, you know, we're getting ready to go. Now this was Wednesday. Tomorrow was a Wednesday. Go ahead, Anna.
When I turned up at the Indian Embassy on Lincoln Park, the page stuck to the door saying, close today, come back tomorrow. I knew I couldn't come home without my passport.
So she called me, and of course I was delighted to hear this news.
So I stood outside for an hour and I chanted, and people came up and cursed at the door and walked out.
Yeah, but who did you chant to?
Ganesh, people came
and went and came and went and cursed and mumbled and grumbled and naturally, and some of them were missing flights.
But
she stood there for an hour and chanted to Ganesh.
And then a limousine pulled up and the ambassador got out and walked up to him and I said, I need to get my passport, I'm flying out today, and they told me to come and pick it up and I'm going to miss my flight. So he told me to stand there and he went off into the embassy. And a few minutes later, a woman came out of the embassy and she said, hold on here, they're going to open the embassy for you. So then a guy comes up the road, maybe 15 minutes later, with his turban on, and he goes in, he opens the passport part of the embassy. He brings me in, finds my passport, and tells me to have a nice trip. And at that stage, then about five or six people are trying to push in through the door at the same time to get theirs. And he turns to me and says, "No, we're not open today." And he turns them all away.
She got home. She got home, and we all got in the taxi and made it to the airport. With plenty of time. Well, just about the right amount of time. And we left for India together. So that's how Ganesh helped her on that occasion. There are many other occasions. That happens to be one of them. That's the most dramatic one. So test it out. So the mantra means, I offer my respects unto Sri Ganesh, the remover of obstacles. Sri is like Mr. or Sir, but actually Sri means beautiful. So chanting this mantra removes obstacles, conflicts, stumbling blocks, difficulties, and reversals in your path. And at the beginning of all endeavors and journeys, it improves intelligence, understanding, and perception. It enhances creativity. It is especially helpful for delving into the subconscious mind for purposes of discovery and psychological healing. There you go. Ganesh is supposed to be in charge of the subconscious mind as well. One of the things he takes care of. Elephants, of course, as you know, are very popular in India. And have been used in even in war. Back in the day, they used to have foot soldiers, chariots.
They're the tanks of the day.
And the elephants were the tanks. Mm-hmm. Yeah, modern day tank sort of thing. Anyway, apart from that, there are many temples in India that have elephants attached to them. So they would be used in the big festivals, and the elephants would be very brightly, beautifully painted and decorated, and beautiful clothing and ornaments placed on them. Sometimes even to carry the deity, the statues, through the streets. In this one temple in South India that I went to, which we might go to in February, we'll just have to figure that out, but yeah, every morning the gods are awakened, the gods in their statue form or deity form are awakened. This is how they serve God, as if he's there, and you do, just as if he's alive. So you do different kinds of service throughout the day. And why do you do that? Because this, when you do it in this way, you become accustomed to developing a service attitude toward God, and you develop devotion. It works. So normally when they awaken the gods, they blow the conch shell. You're going to get the conch shell. They awake them in the morning, and then they chant certain prayers and mantras. But oftentimes it's when they open the doors, they blow the conch, and this tells everybody that the gods are about to appear, or God is about to appear. But in this one temple, they have an elephant. So I happened to be there. I wanted to get there bright and early, and this was about 5 a.m. And this is a conch shell they would love. So they blow that about 3 times. It's loud. I wonder how it'll sound on the recording. So in this temple, they have an elephant, and they bring him right in. And somebody's riding on him, the mahout. The guy who controls him is riding on him. He's decorated. 5 a.m. A little bit of a procession into the temple. And when they open the doors, he trumpets to announce God is awakening. God's appearing. He trumpets. He comes from a long line of elephants going back, I don't know how many, a few hundred years. This temple's hundreds of years old. And it's the family. It's a dynasty of elephants. And there's one that's always been every morning, 5 a.m. The elephant. Elephant trumpet. Horses don't trumpet.
I thought
it
was the man on top
with trumpet. No. The elephant. Boop. The elephant with his trunk. Oh, he knows what he's there for. Elephants are extremely intelligent. Extremely intelligent. And the thing about them remembering, that's a fact. They remember everything. There was another story where there was an elephant attached to a temple, and there was a big festival on that day. And usually they chain the elephant, but with an ankle and then a chain and around the tree, sort of out in the courtyard in front of the temple or someplace. And a little baby, so many people around, a little baby like a toddler, a two-year-old or something, this one was crawling, couldn't walk, crawled over to the foot of the tree right underneath the elephant. This is a female elephant. And then everybody began looking. The child was missing. What happened to the child? And of course, panic, they're looking all over for this little child. And the child was right between the forelegs of the elephant, and she was keeping the child safe. She wouldn't let her out through the legs because she knew she was in danger. And the elephants know exactly where their feet are landing. They're not clumsy at all, even though they're so big. And she was keeping the child within the bars of her legs until they came and rescued the child. She was protecting her. All right. Okay, any other questions, comments, additions, subtractions, amendments? Then let's have a meditation. Close your eyes. Breathe, relax, and let go. Deeply. Deeply relax. Breathe and let go. Allow the stress, tension, fear, and apprehension to drain from your body. Totally, completely relax. Breathe and let go. High above, envision a beautiful beam of radiant pearl white light coming down, down, all the way down from the heavens, entering through the top of your head, expanding throughout your head, torso, arms and legs, out the bottom of your feet, into the earth below. Breathe, relax. And let go. See and feel yourself by means of this light, connected to the heavens above and grounded in the earth below. Relax and let go. All right. You're in a beautiful place in nature, maybe a forest, someplace. And there is the jolly Ganesh now appearing in front of you. What is his attitude and his disposition? How does he greet you? How does he respond when he sees you? What does he say to you? Now, is there a problem or a difficulty or a worry or a fear that you want to place before him? Place that before him now. What does he say about this situation or what does he do? Or what does he tell you to do? Try to find resolution to this problem. When you're finished, when you're complete, look down in your hands. There's a gift for Ganesh. Do not choose the gift. Let it appear in your hands. What is it? Give that gift to Ganesh now. How does he receive your gift? How does he respond? Thank him. And we'll end it there. If you're not finished, please continue until you've finished all the steps. When you are complete, return to consciousness, awakening, feeling refreshed, relaxed, and at peace. Alright, very good. So please remember Ganesh tomorrow on his day. If you're real serious about some spiritual practice, you can fast.
He likes sweets.
Ganesh likes sweets. He loves sweets. So it isn't that you go buy him a Mars bar, although I'm sure that's fine with him. It would be more like you make him something from scratch, something sweet, like a nice apple tart perhaps, or whatever. He likes these sweet balls in his hand, here, right there, a little round lugdu, which would be like dried fruits and these little chicks made out of chickpea flour that they deep fry in ghee, and then they stick it all together like a sticky syrup, and it becomes a round ball. Very delicious.
Did you get that one in India?
No, we got this one at Victor's. Victor's Way.
Really?
In Roundwood.
That guy who's hosting it.
Victor.
Yeah. So, what when you, if you do make something and offer it to him? What then, like if he doesn't eat it, like he drinks the milk?
Well, it won't disappear. I mean, I shouldn't say it won't, but, it, you know, you just offer it. Here's, you got the mantra. So you say, I've made this for you. Please accept it. Enjoy it. And this is for your pleasure. And you're not asking for anything. You're giving. We're always busy asking, do this, do that. You know, we're always asking God. Very rarely do we ever ask God, well, what can I do for you? This, the more you can go, you can develop this attitude and this mentality, the quicker will your spiritual advancement be. The more you get your ego out of the equation and you do things for God, which means for your soul's benefit, really. then the better it will be, and the faster you will make progress on a spiritual path, and the easier things will become in your life. Because when it's an investment of the ego, we're always attached to the outcome. And one of the fundamental lessons of yoga is, don't be attached to the outcome. Hard to do. Very hard to do. So you just offer it to him, and that's it. And you can enjoy it yourself. You're enjoying the remnants of it.
So do you offer, say you make a tart?
Yeah.
Do you offer the whole tart?
Yeah.
Or do you offer a slice of the tart?
Either or. Either or.
But then you can eat it yourself after.
You can eat the whole thing afterwards.
Do you visualize them in your mind? That's right.
You can visualize them in your mind. You can use a picture. You can use... You got a picture right here. See, you can't say you don't have a picture because you do.
Yeah.
Or you can have a statue or, you know. If you want more pictures, go onto the internet and put in Ganesh and click on images and you'll get hundreds of them. It's that simple. You can print them out if you like.
Ganesh wallpaper.
Thank you. Om Tat Sat. Jai Shri Ganesh.